Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. In this hour adventure, later on we'll hear Cloak and Dagger from 1950, but right now it's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune. From October 13th, 1953 on NBC, this episode called Double Identity.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and frequently unemployed young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
You, but I'm the kind of guy who can't stay put. I get restless. Give me a nice soft job, a buck in my pocket, and a meal ticket, and one will get you 10. I'll quit the job, lose the buck on the GGs, and exchange the meal ticket for a train ticket. Hey, you take last week, for instance. The employment agency sends me down to Houston Street for a job as a chauffeur. Hey, Mac, this 159 Houston?
Yeah, what do you want?
Somebody wants to hire a chauffeur.
A chauffeur?
I made a joke?
You take a look around this neighborhood, mister. Who you think got money for a chauffeur? Not even for food, they got money.
Look, all I know is the agency got a call for a chauffeur. 5'9", thin, chauffeur's license, must be able to wear pre-cut uniform.
And you got the wrong breed.
159 Houston, sixth floor.
This is 159 Houston. My name is Zekonik. I'm the janitor. You take a look how many floors we got, eh?
Maybe they meant fifth floor. I better go up.
Yeah, go ahead. Let me know if you get the job, eh?
This don't look like chauffeur land to me, but I figure I already blew a subway token to get here, so I leg it up four flights of stairs left over from a Charles Adams cartoon. As I am rounding the turn at flight number 5, a funny-looking little guy steps out of the shadows.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah?
You got change for a buck?
Sure. Here.
Thanks.
Hey.
Huh?
Where's the clam?
Here. Oh.
Now, I've been rolled before, but this guy works on my skull like he's a Sherman tank in the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. When I come to, I'm in a white room with iron grillwork on the windows. It's morning, which means I made an evening of it. Alongside my bed stands a gorilla in a white coat. I figure this place repaired at Bellevue. I am mistaken.
Okay, take it easy, Steve.
Oh.
How do you feel this morning?
Oof.
You've had a couple of bad nights, Steve.
A couple? What day is this?
Tuesday.
Holy smokes. I've been out since Saturday.
Last week, you were pretty good. Only a couple of lapses.
Did you say last week?
That's right, Steve.
The name is Rocky. Rocky Fortune.
You're not going to start that again, are you, Steve?
Start what?
That Rocky Fortune bit. Dr. Harris wouldn't like it.
Listen. Oh, what a hangover.
Take it easy.
Look, where am I, Buster?
Mount Kenzie Rest Home.
Mount Kenzie. Is that in the Bronx?
It's near Denver.
Denver? Denver, New York?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay, buddy. If the joke's over, I'll take my clothes and get out of here.
Joke, Steve?
Joke, Jake. Give me the clothes.
I'm afraid I can't do that. Not without Dr. Harris's order.
Will you tell the good doctor that Rocky Fortune wants to have a word with him?
Now, if you're going to insist on that, Steve, I'm afraid we'll have to try the treatment again.
What treatment?
Come along.
Take the hands off, Buster. You're etching the epidermis.
You coming along?
Not if I can help it.
Okay.
Johann's a big guy in the judo department, besides which they got me drugged like a hypochondriac with a third-degree hangnail. and drags me into a white tile room and starts to massage my head with a fist like a sledgehammer. Only this bum's got a new wrinkle. First he puts a pail on my head and then he hits the pail. After 20 minutes of this, I begin to feel like the main bell on St. Mary's Christmas morning. Just when I think I can't take it anymore, a gray-haired guy with a scarred face ambles in.
All right, Johann. All right. That's enough. Take the pail off his head.
Oh.
How do you feel, Stephen?
Oh, just dandy.
Johann is so impulsive.
Repulsive.
Would you like a cigarette?
Yeah. How about getting me out of this polo coat?
Yes, in a moment. First, I want to see if you've come to your senses.
Look, would you mind telling me what this is all about? One minute I'm being rolled in a hallway in New York City, and the next minute I wake up in Denver, Colorado.
Stephen, you've been here at Mount Kenzie for 8 years.
My name is Rocky, born Rocco Fortunato.
Your name is Stephen Crandall III. 8 years ago, you were thrown from a polo pony and sustained a head injury. You suffered from delusions. You've been under treatment here.
Come on, Doc. What's the ransom?
Ransom?
How much do I have to raise to get out of here?
You see, Johann, he's still very sick.
Poor fella.
Yes. I'm afraid we'll just have to continue the treatment. All right, Johann, put the pail on his head. Now, once again, what's your name?
Rocky. And if you don't like it, you can...
All right, Johann. Now we'll try it once more. Your name?
Go jumping.
Johann. Name? That's enough, Johann. Hey, well, young man, your name?
Stephen.
Stephen what, please?
Stephen Crandall, III.
Your age?
32.
How long have you been here?
8 years.
Why did you come here?
Polo accident.
Good, good. And now, once again, your name?
Crandall. Stephen Crandall.
By the time Johann and the phony doctor decided to call it a night, they almost had me convinced I was Stephen Crandall. Pardon me, the third. They doped me up again for the night, and next morning we covered the course again.
Good morning, Stephen.
You
slept well?
I had a funny dream.
So?
I dreamed I was a guy named Rocky Fortune. I dreamed I went to apply for a job as a chauffeur in New York City, and somebody sapped me. Pretty funny, huh?
But you understand it was only a dream.
Oh, sure.
I'm happy to hear that. You see, today we have a surprise for you. Can you guess?
I get a new pail. No jokes?
No jokes.
Check. What's the surprise?
You're going home.
I thought you said no jokes.
Well, this isn't a joke, Stephen. I feel you're ready to leave at last. We're going to let you go home, on trial, of course. Now, at the first sign of your delusion that you are someone other than Stephen Crandall, I'm afraid you'll have to return.
When do I fly?
Tomorrow morning. Johann will accompany you.
I get another shot of essence of vampire and wake up next morning feeling as strong as a mouse. Before I know what happens, they hustle me into a black Duesenberg and drive toward Denver. About 2 miles out of town, we cut up a winding private road and stop in front of a 28-room bungalow. The doc and Johann walk me to the door, close enough so I can feel the muzzle of Johann's .45 caressing my spine. The door is opened by a medium-sized butler right out of Dickens, with side whiskers and all.
Yes, gentlemen.
Hello, Deems.
Why, it's Dr. Harris and Mr. Stephen. We weren't expecting you so early. Mr. Stephen, how are you?
Speak up, Steve.
Hmm?
Oh, fine, Deems, the old man. Just peachy.
Come in, sir. Come in. Welcome home.
Thanks.
Have a seat, Mr. Stephen. I'll inform Miss Laurie you're home.
Hello, myself into a chunk of Chippendale and wait. My head aches and everything looks like a 3D movie without glasses. After a couple of minutes through the blur, I see a dame come floating down the staircase. Even in my weak condition, I can appreciate that she's got more curves than the Jersey Turnpike. She takes one look and comes on like gangbusters.
Steve, darling. Oh, darling.
Sis, this is your wife, Steve. He's still a bit confused, Laura.
Oh, I understand, Doctor. Oh, it's good to have you home, Steve. Kiss me again, darling.
You know something, baby? It's good to be home. We go into a clinch again, and I am just beginning to enjoy my new identity when Deemsey clears his adenoids and announces...
excuse me, Miss Laura. Judge Harley is calling.
The judge? Here? Well, Dr. Harris, is it all right?
Judge Harley is an old friend of the family, isn't he?
Yes, he's known Stephen since he was a boy.
Well, I think it'll be all right. Just behave yourself, Stephen.
Oh, sure.
Very well, Deems. Show him in.
Yes, ma'am.
Remember, Stephen.
How can I forget?
This way, Your Honor.
Laura. Well, 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 and Stephen. I heard you were coming home, but I didn't expect I'd actually find you here. How are you, my boy?
Great, great. Just great.
Let me look at you. Oh, he's changed, Laura. Thin. Ought to eat more. Well, I expect 8 years in a way. It can change a man.
Even 8 hours can do it.
Very thin indeed. You know, I hate to see a thin man or a woman.
This is Dr. Harris from the rest home and his assistant, Mr. Fiddler. Judge Harley, gentlemen.
How do you do, Judge?
I won't intrude. I just dropped by to see how you were progressing with your personal bankruptcy.
My attorney will file in a week or so, Judge.
Yes, well, it mustn't delay too long, you know. As a friend, I'll hold back the flood as long as I can, but creditors will be creditors. Yes. Well, I'll be running along. Stephen, it's been wonderful to see you back in the bosom of your family. You've fattened him up now, Laura. Hate to see a thin man or woman. Good day.
I give the judge a couple of seconds to leg down to his black limousine, which I can see through the French window. I toss a haymaker at Johann and pull an Esther Williams through the casement. I land in a bramble patch, Natch, just as the judge gets to his car.
Judge Harley. Hold it.
Stephen, what is it?
Get in the car. I can't talk now. Come on, let's get going.
Oh, but Stephen, I...
Look, I'm not Stephen. My name is Rocky Fortune. This whole thing's a big hoax. Now step on it before they get here.
Of course, Stephen.
Rocky.
Strange, it won't start.
The ignition's not on.
Okay, hold it. Don't try to get away, Steve.
Fat chance.
You okay, Judge?
What happened?
Steve here tried to do away with himself. Right out of the window. Lucky it was the first floor.
What was he telling me about being Rocky something or other?
Oh, he's Rocky, all right.
Judge, listen. Call the Gridley Employment Agency in New York, will
you? Steve, you know what I got in my pocket. Now, be a good boy, and I'll give you some candy.
Okay, Ape Man. You win. This time.
Sorry to have troubled you, Judge. Come on, Steve.
I'm glad I was of service. Take good care of Steve now.
Don't worry about that, Judge.
It's thin. Very thin.
Back into the house like a piece of stale mackerel, and the good doctor immediately slips me a needle full of wink and blink and a nod.
Yeah, there we are.
Oh, the poor darling, he's all scratched up. Let me take him up to our room.
Yeah. My dear, you see how unstable he is. I'm afraid he'd better be in a separate room. Johann will stay with him.
But we haven't seen each other for 8 years.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Laura. As his physician,
I... You're no more physician than I am, Steve Crandall. Baby, they're trying to put one over on you. I don't know why.
Johann.
But...
Yes, Doctor.
the muscle on me, and I'm locked into the guest room on the second floor. By the time we reach the door, my head feels like the steam room at an all-night Turkish bath. I get my ear on the pillow and pass out.
Rocky.
Hmm?
It's me, Laura.
Hmm.
I've been waiting for you.
I've arrived.
Kiss me, Rocky.
Why not? Say, that's nice perfume.
I'm glad you like it.
Makes me sleepy.
Sleep.
Smells like... Smells like marsh gas. Gas. Gotta wake up. Gotta open the window. Come on, Rocky. Come on, boy. That's a boy. Crawl. Crawl, boy. That's it. Now the chair. Window. Come on, boy.
Steve, what is it? I was in my room and I heard a crash.
Nothing much, baby. Let me get some air.
Well, you're sick.
I ain't healthy. Whew. Turn off that gas heater, will you? Where's Johann?
He's downstairs with Dr. Harris. Well, Steve, what happened?
Nothing. Your friend Johann tried to fit me for a casket, that's all.
Steve?
I am not Steve. Let's get it straight, honey. Whew. Before Muscles gets back. My name is Rocky Fortune. I'm a ringer. The doc and Johann are trying to pass me off as your husband. You ought to know better.
I do.
It's a nice time to say so.
I didn't dare. They threatened to murder me.
Okay, let's have it.
My husband committed suicide in their sanatorium some months ago. He carried very heavy life insurance. Naturally, we couldn't collect on a suicide. Johann and the doctor decided that they wouldn't report the death. They got you to take Steve's place.
I begin to get it. I have an accident, you collect double indemnity, and they pry you loose from the money.
They forced me into it.
Okay, we gotta get out of here, baby.
But they'll kill us.
Not if they want me to look like an accident, they won't. I'm worth a lot of loot, kid.
Well, how can we do it?
Is there anybody in the house you can trust?
Deems.
Fine. Get to him, tell him to have a car ready in front of the house in exactly 5 minutes. Where's Johann and the doc?
Downstairs.
Probably give me plenty of time to soak up the ether. Okay, look, go down, tell them I'm lying here dead. When they come up, you get out to the car. Got it?
Yes.
Wish me luck.
Good luck, Steve.
Rocky.
Good luck, Rocky.
As soon as Laura leaves, I fix up a dummy out of pillows and stuff it in the bed. And I slip out of the room and hide in an alcove about 10 feet away. I wait. A minute later, the doc and Johann come stumbling up the stairs like a thundering herd. I let him rush into the room, take 2 giant steps, and lock the door behind him.
Hey, open that door. Open that door.
Can't hear you, Uncle.
Please open the door.
Temper, temper.
Open the door, please.
So long, gentlemen. Don't think it hasn't been a pleasure, because it hasn't. I am down the steps like a grasshopper in a granary, and on my way out when I see the telephone and get a sudden inspiration.
Operator?
Operator, I want the municipal courthouse. Judge Harley, it's an emergency.
I'll connect you with information.
I said emergency, baby.
If it's an emergency, baby, I'll give you the hospital.
I'll settle for information. Make it fast. Upstairs, I can hear Johann and the doctor making headway with the door, and I don't have much time to waste on explanations. I need something that'll knock the judge right off his bench and bring him out here in a hurry.
Hello?
Judge Harley?
Yes?
This is Deems, the Crandall butler.
Oh, what is it, Deems?
Master Stevens has just murdered the entire family, sir. He's kidnapping me.
What? What is this? What's that banging noise?
It's dynamite, sir. He's blowing up the house room by room. I think you'd better get out here, sir. Here they come.
Deems.
Bye. I figure this ought to bring him out on the double, so I write a message on the mirror with Laura's lipstick and leap out to the car, 1 jump ahead of the hounds.
Are you all right, Rocky?
Fine.
What took so long?
Had to call my bookmaker and was sure of bet.
What about the doc and Johann?
On the inside, looking out. Head for the local constabulary, deems the old sock.
Yes, sir.
I spend the next few minutes gazing fondly into Laura Crandall's lavender eyes as she gazes back. I can see the fine blue blood surge through her cheeks. And on her, a blue surge looks pretty good. I'm ready to surrender to the beast in me when Deemsy makes a screaming turn off the main highway and pulls to a stop 10 feet from the edge of a cliff. Hey, what gives?
There's been a car following us, sir.
I didn't see any car.
If I may say so, sir, you weren't paying much attention.
All right, let's get going.
I'm afraid not, sir.
Listen, egghead, I said let's get...
You were saying?
Put down the gun, Deemsy.
I'll give the orders, Mr. Fortune. Get out.
Wait a minute, what is this?
Just step over to the edge of the cliff, if you please.
What if I don't please?
You take on weight all of a sudden.
He means it, Rocky.
Okay. Mind if I ask what happens next, or am I being naive?
Next, Mr. Fortune, you accidentally fall off the cliff. The car follows you.
Accident. Double indemnity.
Exactly. Now, turn around.
What makes you think they're going to believe it?
You're suicidal. Even Judge Harley saw you go through a window.
Very neat.
Turn around. We haven't much time.
Okay.
Laura, push him over.
I...
Come on, this is no time to lose your nerve.
Steve, I...
Push him.
I can't do it.
All right. Take the gun. I'll do it myself.
I hear a car.
Stop worrying. All right, Mr. Fortune.
That first step looks like a Lulu.
Get going.
Wait, listen.
A police car. Come on. Okay, hold it. Hold it or I shoot.
Steve, watch out for the cliff.
Oh, no.
Grab her.
I've got her.
Let me go.
Take it easy, baby.
You all right, Mr. Fortune?
I'll let you know later. Right now, I'm a little numb.
Well, you picked up the car and then lost it again.
What convinced you I was telling the truth when I called?
I know you weren't Stephen Crandall the first time I laid eyes on you. I also know I couldn't do anything about it at the time. When you phoned me before you left the house a few minutes ago, I'd already checked the employment agency in New York City. You're lucky we picked up the car.
What about the guy who fell off the cliff, Judge?
Is he dead, Sergeant?
Well, I didn't have a chance. Who is he?
As far as I know, he's the Crandall butler.
You got it wrong, Judge.
You know him?
I think if you take off those phony side whiskers, you'll find out he's the guy I was supposed to impersonate, Steve Crandall.
What?
Blossom here called him Steve just before he took the Brody.
Laura, is it Stephen?
Yes.
Why did you do this?
We had no money when Steve left the institution. He cooked up this scheme with the doc and Johann to cash in on his own insurance.
Next time I answer an ad for a chauffeur, remind me to make sure they want a live chauffeur, not a corpse.
Tonight, NBC Radio has presented, transcribed, Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young man known as Rocky Fortune. Others in the cast included Francis Urey, Maurice Hart, Jack Mather, Herb Ellis, Stanley Fraser, Lynn Allen, and Stephen Chase. Andrew C. Love directed. Eddie King speaking. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
That's how come I'm back on unemployment insurance again. Not for long, though. Next week, I'll tell you about the next job I had. Steward on a big luxury liner to Bermuda. I figured I'd like to see the ocean, you know. A couple of guys were trying to help me, too. Only they wanted me to see it the hard way. From the bottom.
Next week, then, tune in again when Frank Sinatra returns as Rocky Fortune. Enjoy Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Rocky Fortune on Tuned to Yesterday from October 13th, 1953 on NBC. It was in that month that star Frank Sinatra separated from his then-wife Ava Gardner, who actually helped secure him a role in the motion picture From Here to Eternity in 1953, for which he won the Best Actor Oscar that year. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. And now a true-to-life Second World War story from Cloak and Dagger. From June 11th, 1950, on NBC, this episode called The People in the Forest.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's story, The People in the Forest, is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
The plane began to slow down, and then it circled slowly. Someone pulled the cover off the jump hole, and I got my first view of France. Occupied France. August 1944.
Action stations.
On the ground to the right, I could see fires, like safety matches lit in the moonlight. And I wondered how big they really were, those fires that were out there to guide us in. The dispatcher told me I was to jump second.
Running in. Ready, number one?
Ready.
And then it happened. The first bad break of that mission. Only it didn't happen to me, it happened to Chris Fowler.
See you in France, Capella!
Okay, Fowler.
Number one, good luck. Go!
Geronimo!
I just stood there, looking down, watching him go. And then my heart started to pound all over me, my breath caught, and I nearly choked on it. Chris fell and fell and fell. But the chute didn't work. Came out of the bag and streamed unopened behind him. Paratroopers call that a Roman candle.
Tough break. Want to turn back, Scarpella?
Huh? No, I'll jump it.
Okay, then. Ready, number two? Number two, ready?
Ready?
Jump!
The wind came up and hit me in a rush. I felt myself falling. I think I died a few times until I heard the crack of the chute. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. The most beautiful sight in the whole world, that big white umbrella over me. The little safety matches on the ground got bigger and bigger. I realized they were torches. And then I saw a figure of a man waving. He started to get bigger, too. And then the torches were put out. I was about to get my first introduction to the French underground.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all right.
I saw what happened to your friend. It was too bad.
Yeah.
You had courage to jump after that.
Maybe if I'd stopped to think about it, I never would have. Maybe I was afraid I'd never jump again if I didn't then. Well, anyway, here I am. My name is Captain Robert Scarpella.
Captain Robert Scarpella. American. Welcome. Welcome to France. I'm ecstatic to make your acquaintance, Captain.
The little guy threw his arms around me and kissed me. When I was 12, I'd said nix to kissing my father goodnight because it embarrassed me. And here was this little Frenchman with the beret and baggy pants and farmer's shoes with his arms around me. Hey, cut it off, will you?
I'm just so happy to see you, American. Well, I'm the Fox. The Germans themselves gave me that name. Look at this head. Would you believe there is a price on it?
Oh, are you the leader?
Yes, of one of our little bands. The British radio alerted us about your coming.
Well, there's a good reason for my coming, Captain Fox.
You may call me simply Fox.
Okay, Fox.
Well, all right. Now let's pick up supplies that were brought to you.
Right.
As for your mission, Captain, there will be time enough to talk about it when we get deeper into the forest to our hideaway.
Is it very far from here?
Unfortunately, there's a little walk. We were forced to move our headquarters last night after another German raid.
What do you mean, another?
Our positions have been raided 3 times the past month. Almost as if the Boche were given a map of where we were in the forest.
Oh? Sounds to me like somebody's dirty work.
I have thought of that, Captain. But if there is a traitor in our group, I shall find him. We know how to deal with such.
I'll bet you do. Oh, here we are.
Oh. That's nice. Very, very, very nice. This carbon rifle. Beautiful, beautiful.
There are shoes in those packages, too, and food and grenades.
Oh, what a beautiful rifle.
I was to tell you to expect a heavy supply drop in a few weeks.
Oh, what a beautiful rifle. We still are using field pieces from the Franco-Prussian War. But this is a beauty. Now gather up your things, Captain Scarpella. I'll be back in a few minutes. I'll be back.
The fox disappeared into the woods. The whole thing seemed like a crazy nightmare. The whole forest surrounded by Germans. And yet here I was passing the time of day just like nothing at all with a Frenchman who had a price on his head. And somewhere out there, where he drifted, Chris was a dead heap under a lot of parachute silk. I grabbed the gun, and I waited for trouble. I didn't know whether to go after the fox and take a chance on being ambushed or stay where I was. Someone was coming. I ducked behind a tree. The only thing I could figure was the Germans had seen the plane, seen me land. I took aim. Carefully. Slowly.
American. American, where are you?
Oh, for crying out loud. What happened? What were those shots?
I just wanted to get the feel of your gun. So I simply tried it on a couple of Germans over the edge of the hill. It sights very well, though.
Oh, for crying out loud.
This little dinner party is in your honor, Captain Scarpella.
Oh?
I regret we have nothing better than wild rabbits to offer you.
Well, it's a swell. Quite a welcome. Headquarters didn't tell me to expect anything like this.
Luzette, more wine for the captain.
But of course. Here, I will refill your glass.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, mais non. In France, we say thank you. This way.
Hey.
You mind my kissing you?
No, not at all.
I love Americans.
Huh?
All Americans.
Hey.
Come help me. I need your help.
Luzette, let go. Marie's calling you.
Oh, oui, maman, I am coming.
She's a very pretty girl, that...
Luzette.
Yeah.
And very young.
Yeah?
Only 17.
Oh?
Already she has seen so much. Hiding like this in the forest, sneaking back into the German-held village.
Into the village?
Oui, monsieur. Many of our group work in the village, right under the noses of the enemy. And the Germans do not know that they are members of the Maquis.
Oh, but they know you're here.
Oh, they know. They know that we're here, but they do not dare come near the forest, except in big raiding parties.
Uh-huh.
They know very well that to one dead of ours, there will be 12 dead of theirs. Well, Captain, now about your mission. Its purpose? Tell me more, please.
Well, I was sent here to find out the German defense plans for the port of San Nazaire and the entire coastal area around here.
Ah.
I know those plans are in German headquarters in the village.
And you request our help?
I've got to have those plans, and in a matter of days. I've got to deliver them personally to 8th Corps headquarters.
Now put your mind at ease, Captain Scarpella. The fox will help you. Now, the first thing I will do is put you in contact...
Attention! Captain Scarpella, I'm Marie.
Ah. She's the mother cat of that little kitten who kissed you before.
Oh, happy to meet you.
And we are all enchanted to meet you, American. In your honor, we have a special surprise. Listen. Attention. Un, deux, trois.
Oh, take me out to the ball again.
Well, for crying out loud.
You're pleased, Captain Scarpella.
Well, this is something to write home about.
Write home about?
Yeah. Yeah, nice cozy evening with friends. Oh, you'd never know there was a war going on.
Nibos!
Alert! Where's the lookout?
Two separate trucks about a kilometer from here, Captain Fox.
I see. What else?
There are two divisions at least of German soldiers surrounding us.
Captain Scarpella, I regret very much to have interrupted your welcome party in this manner.
Renner?
Oui, Lupox.
Renner?
Oui.
The new machine our American friend brought with him.
Oui.
Now, what is it called, Captain Scarpella?
A bazooka.
Oh, yes, this bazooka. Now, take it to an advantageous position. You understand?
Oui, Fox.
Now, listen.
Yes, now, my friend. Now is the best time for him and some of the others to learn how to use it.
Oh, for crying out loud.
If I thought it seemed like a nightmare before, it was nothing to what happened now. It's so mixed up in my mind, I can't remember it clearly. It wasn't anything like the patrols I'd been trained for in the Army.
Now, Captain Scarpella, follow me, please.
All right.
Ah. These Germans are becoming very annoying.
Would you mind pointing that the other way, Fox?
Yes, yes, excuse me. This bazooka is a beauty. Just a little beauty.
From out of nowhere, a German soldier fell forward on his face. And then the Fox and I moved on. I remember thinking, cripes, this is like kids playing cops and robbers. French boys, still in their teens, ran by with a cross of Lorraine sewn on their coats. I saw Marie take aim behind a tree. And all the time, the Fox kept smiling. He never stopped smiling.
I feel selfish, Captain Scarpella. Give me that gun. I will let you borrow yours a while. There, about 50 yards ahead, there is a juicy rabbit in German uniform.
Oh?
Please get him.
Captain LaFox was right. The rifle did sight well. And then all of a sudden, there were less Frenchmen around and more Germans all around us.
In a case like this, my friend, the best course is to run. Well, let us run.
This forest is like a jigsaw puzzle to me. You know it backwards.
It is from necessity, of course. I regret exceedingly that I must ask you to join me here in this swamp. We will stay here till it is safe to leave.
Shh, the boss.
Under the water. Leave only your nose above it to breathe.
How can one fight what one cannot see?
I think we have in this time, Herr Hoffman. They are scattered and disorganized. Perhaps this is the end of our trouble with them.
Relaxed. They're retreated. But those arrogant devils may return again.
Well, we'll find out from our informant later how good a job we have done this time.
Yeah. I'm going up ahead.
Shall I stay here as guard?
No. It is not necessary. There's nothing here. Come better with me.
Yeah, Herr Hoffman.
They have posted a guard here. It would have been most inconvenient, Captain Scarpella. Are you very wet?
What do you think?
Well, there will be clean clothes for you at our hideout. Come. It is time for us to go there. Well, this has been a very annoying evening, Captain.
Fox. Fox, did you hear what they said about...
An informant. I heard. Captain Scarpella, Marie is employed as charwoman in German headquarters in the village. She is the contact of whom I spoke.
Uh-huh.
What can I do to help you? Just tell me.
There are plans for the defense of Saint-Nazaire. What do you think the chances are that they may be in the files of the office where you work, Marie?
Very good, I would say.
Marie, tell me, what are my chances of getting into those files?
Also very good.
Mm-hmm.
The door of the Hauptmann's office is left open for me, so I may wash the floors.
I see.
It will be easy to enter. As for the files, I have a key.
A key?
Wait, I will give it to you.
Well, this is better than I hoped for. When can we go, tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Why not now? The Germans are still out searching the forest, and the coast will be clear. Let us leave now.
Well, I'll say it for you, Captain Scarpella. For crying out loud.
Less than an hour later, we were in the village. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and there was no one around. The village slept.
Captain Scarpella, listen to me.
Yeah.
There is the German headquarters across the street.
Mm-hmm.
I will leave you and go inside to get my mop and bucket. You will watch through the window.
Right.
When I distract the guard, go quickly to the side door. It is open.
Uh-huh.
The Hauptmann's office is the third door from the end.
The third, huh?
You have the key to the files, huh?
Yes, I have it.
Bon, I go now. Remember the signal I give you in case of danger.
I watched her go into the building. And then I took up my position at the open window. There was a guard at the front desk. No one else around. I pressed myself into the shadows. And after a while, Marie came to the front desk and began to mop the floor.
How are you doing here, Charlie?
I'm not that early, Sergeant. And the sooner I finish, the sooner I am through.
How about your business, sir?
I knew that soon she'd do something to distract him.
You're disturbing me.
This too must be worse, Noah. I will be through presently.
Ah, fine. You spilled that all over my boots.
No. I'm so sorry. It was not deliberate.
All over my boots. Look at the mess.
The side door was open, and she said it would be.
Sorry for this.
One, two, three. The third door from the end.
The other end of the room.
I made it. The German captain's office. And in the corner were the files. The key in my hand was hot and sticky. It fit. It fit. The key fit. I knew it would, but somehow it slid in and turned. I took a breath of relief. I didn't have much time. I knew it didn't have much time. I had to find those plans, but where? The papers. Where were they? And I heard Marie's signal. And I froze. What a break. But I couldn't stop searching now. Where are they?
I only meant I would have been through with washing the floor in front of your office.
Almost as if God had put it into my hand at the right moment, I found the photostatic copies of the defense plans. Now, if she could only hold them off until I got out of the place. Let's see now, let's see. The window, that's it. It was only a short drop to the ground and still no one in sight. I had a feeling Marie could take care of herself and I started back for the forest, the plans in my pocket.
Now, see here, Captain Scarpella. I'm the man, you see? You come out of the forest 3 miles north at this point.
Right. Is that a clear road, Fox?
You will have no difficulty, Captain. There has never been any reason for the Boche to post guards at this exit. Now pay attention, Captain.
Yeah.
I must talk to you, both of you.
Marie, what are you doing back at the farmhouse? Why are you not in the village?
Marie, was there trouble after I left through that window? Do they know about the papers?
They know, because they were told. Told by a dirty little spy from our own ranks.
What?
Now, please, quiet. This is my business, Captain. Speak, Marie.
I overheard the spy. One of us. I blush with shame to think of it. The spy was telling the Boche captain about the papers and the Americans' mission. Fortunately for you, Captain Scarpella, the spy was not able to warn him early enough.
Go on, Marie, go on.
And the road is blocked, however. You are trapped here, American. You may have the plans, but there is no way for you to leave and deliver them. The road north is swarming with red ants of Germans.
The traitor. His name. Give me his name, Marie.
I will do better. I will give you the traitor. René, bring her in here.
No, please.
Rosette.
On the floor.
Get me with her once.
I said throw her on the floor.
No.
Listen to her sob, my own daughter, torn from my own flesh. My daughter, not for what is going to be done to you, but for what you have done, spy, traitor. This girl, my daughter. I spit on her.
I did not know.
I waited for her outside.
What I was doing.
After I heard her with her captain, her German captain. I waited for her and dragged her back here. Fox, do what you want with her.
Lozette.
No.
Lozette, look at me.
No.
Was it you? You who gave away our positions each time?
Answer.
Yes, I told them. It has been so hard. I have known war for so long now. All my life, it seems.
I have known two wars. Would I turn on my own? I'm glad your father is dead, so he does not see this.
They promised me so much. I did not think it so bad. I only gave them small bits of information.
Small bits of information?
Except for this last about the American.
You call giving away our hideout small, Lucette?
We are so much smarter than they. And it always gave us a chance to kill so many of them.
Your excuses disgust me. Say the word, Fox. Let me throw her to the rest.
No, Mama. Pity.
I am your mother no longer. Do not call me that.
Now, wait a minute. Listen to me. Fox, this may be your affair, but I've got a stake in it.
Now, what do you wish to say, Captain?
There's only one way out of this forest. It's blocked right now.
Thanks to her.
Now, let's forget that. All that matters to me is that I get through with these plans. Now, Lizette. Lizette, do you want a chance to prove yourself?
Oh, oui, I will do anything.
Do not listen to her, Captain.
Marie.
Two faces she has.
Now, quiet. Go on, Captain.
Now, at German headquarters before, Marie distracted the guard because she knew him. Now, who knows the Germans at the exit to the forest to distract them?
I do. I will. Let me, please. They trust me. I will give you a chance to slip by.
It is too great a risk, my friend.
I have no choice. I can't stay trapped here. The plans are no good in my pocket.
Very well. On one condition. I will go alone. And if she does not do as she says, the fox will shoot her through the heart.
You have my permission.
There are many clouds out tonight to hide the moon.
Well, the darker the better.
Lizette, there are your friends at the foot of the hill. Go to them. We will hide here among these piles of firewood.
Oui, I will go.
And remember, Lizette, this gun is aimed at you. Go.
We hid behind towering cords of tree trunks and branches piled in the woodlot for the village's firewood. We watched. A few minutes later, we saw them. The soldiers and the girl, silhouetted against the moon. We couldn't hear what they were saying, but every once in a while, we heard them laugh.
They swarm about her like bees about a flower. Come this way. We will sneak past them and into the brush.
She's doing a good job trying to redeem herself.
Stupid American, it's completely trapped with no way out.
You're a sly one, Lucette. Du bist sehr klug.
It's time to do too. The Hauptmann did not make a mistake with you, no?
There are advantages to being an officer, eh?
Hey, my sword!
Uh-oh, we're caught.
They see you, American! Run!
Captain, this way. Into the brush.
Get back! Halt! Get back! Let go of this gun!
I looked back over my shoulder and saw Lizette crumple into a heap on the road. I knew she was dead.
Do not grieve for her, my friend. It is best this way. It is easier than living with herself.
How do we get out of this? We're surrounded.
You're surrounded, American. Surrender.
Surrender? What means that word?
We know you are a dead wood rot. We have you cornered. Come out.
Perhaps this will help you, Mincho. Popper, over there. Step out of the bush. Come on, you do the same.
Trying to burn us out. If we come out, we'll be shot down by the machine guns.
American, I have an idea.
Yeah.
Stand here. When you hear a loud crash and I call out, you run through the fire. It is not bed yet, my friend.
He ran, like the fox of his nickname, to the tallest pile of firewood. In the dark night, I saw him struggle with a log at the base of the pile, and then the huge tower of wood came tumbling down and screamed. I plunged through the fire and found the pass. And a few minutes later, the sly fox miraculously joined me.
You can make it from here alone to the American lines, Captain Scarpelli.
What about you, Fox?
Don't worry about the fox. I'll get back all right. Perhaps we shall meet again one day, Captain. Who knows? Well, au revoir, then. Goodbye.
I never looked back. And I never saw him again. But when I think of him now, I think of him not with the beret, but with a green hat and a feather. A little like Robin Hood.
Captain Scarpella delivered the plans personally to the assistant G2 at 8th Corps headquarters. And he was recommended for the Distinguished Service Cross for the American lives he had saved at the port of San Nazaire. Thus, the exploits of another OSS agent closes with the words,
mission accomplished.
A further adventure in black warfare is next week's
Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 11th, 1950 on NBC. And so closes this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.